Okay, so here we are in the sixth chapter, Psicha LeMishneh Beis. This is the preface to the second Mishnah, Chozer al Perek Rishon V'Sheni. So now, as we said previously, the sixth chapter, one of the things that happens in this chapter is that we revisit some of the concepts that have appeared in earlier chapters, and they are given another facet. They're looked at in another way. So now, we come back to the first and second chapters of Maski Mishal Perek Rishon, and this Mishnah mentions something that cropped up in the first chapter, Shesham Huzbo Asa Sefiros, and it was in this first chapter that the 10 Sefiros were mentioned. Mishal Perek Sheni, and something of the second chapter, Shesham Nisbaru Muhusa Chuf Beis Oisios, because it was in the second chapter that the concept of 22 letters and how the 22 letters form a globe which is spinning and revolving. And in this chapter we take the 10 Sefiros and the 22 letters and bring them together at the source which is above Olam Shona and Nefesh, above space and time and personality. Dehaini, that is Beteli Galgal Volev. In three new concepts that we come across here, which we actually don't really come across anywhere else, not just in Sefer Yetzirah, but anywhere else in literature, in Jewish literature, something called Teli, Galgal, and Lev. So these three concepts of Olam Nefesh Shona, now we are introduced to three new concepts out of the blue, Teli, Galgal, and Lev. Well, Galgal is a wheel, Lev is a heart. What is Teli? Ika shal shabu mishnah zu letaretz, and the main question that this Mishnah is coming to answer, hu eich kol mu'ure v'chol nivre v'chol masu shemibreshis mikusha u'metuva, how is it that every event that has happened since the beginning of the beginning, how is it woven into one fabric? At she'ein kol dova benefesh she'inenu mekusha bo'olam v'shona, until there is nothing in the soul that isn't also connected all through space and all through time. Ve'ein dova bo'olam, there is nothing in space she'inenu mekusha benefesh v'shona, that isn't connected throughout all time and all soul. So, at this till this place, we have seen the months of the year, we have seen the limbs of the body, we have seen letters and sefirot, and we take it on trust that they're all connected because the Sefer Yetzirah says so. In this Mishnah, the Sefer Yetzirah is saying that everything is connected because of a certain triplicate of concepts of Teli, Galgal, and Lev. And so, Ein Dova Ba'olam She'ein Mekusha, and there's nothing in the world that isn't also connected to everything else in the world. So, there isn't just a fabric of space and a fabric of time and a fabric of being, of personality, of awareness, of consciousness, but in fact, there is one fabric made up of these three. I guess a little bit like quarks inside the nucleus of an atom. These three which cannot really be separated. And the Mishnah explains, Sheha'edim Atzmon, that the witnesses to these, Olam Shona Nefesh, Yesh Lehem Miktzav Utehuda, that Olam Nefesh Shona have like a rhythm, a resonance. Each of them is spun with, it's hard to explain, each of them, Olam, the universe, it vibrates. Time has a rhythm. The soul vibrates with a rhythm in tune with the universe and in tune with space. And that this, the rhythm of the universe creates a fabric, and that is the fabric of existence. And the fabric of existence can actually, you can touch anywhere in the world, and if you're sensitive enough, anywhere else can feel your touch. So if you're sensitive, you can feel the touch of the other through space and through time. And this is what this mission is about. And I suspect that there is some error, because it's such difficult language. My feeling is that there's some scribal error here in the text, because it's very difficult to make the text flow in a way. So here we are, Mishnah 2. Let's have a look. Chitzo es ho'edim. He halved, like chatzi. Chitzo es ho'edim. He halved the witnesses. Chok asora. In the rule of 10. Shloisha, in the rule of 3. Vishiva, in the rule of 7. Viyud beis mazolois, in the 12 constellations. Ufikidin, and functionaries. Beteli, Galgal, Valev. And Teli I have translated as a quiver, Galgal a wheel, and Lev a heart. So let's look at note number 9. Chitzo. The word chitzo means to split something in half. As it is written in Breshis, Vayachatz es ha'oma she'itoy, and he divided, or he halved the people with him, l'shnei machanois, into two camps. It talks about Yaakov before he met his brother Esav. V'loi pirusho shemodad oisam she'ishtavu ha'chatzon, and it doesn't mean to divide exactly into half. V'gam eina muchrach she'tia davke l'shnaim, it doesn't even mean halving in the sense of into two parts. Because if you say that, if you actually look at the text, it appears that Yaakov actually had three. He ended up with three. Two big camps and one small one. We learn also in the Medrash, B'shosh Shalach Avram Avinu Es Yodoy Likach Samecheles Lishchitzes Benoy. When Avraham Avinu stretched out his hand to take the knife that with which he was going to slaughter his son, Bochu Malachei Hashoreis, the angels started to cry. Hainu Da'oma, this is what it means when it says the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Hen Ed Eilim Tzua Kuchutza, the mighty ones are crying outside. Mahu Chutza, so the word Chutza means outside, Bachutz, right? Mahu Chutza. So, Rebbe Azariah Omar, Chotzok Siv. If you have a look in the text in Yeshaya, the word chutzo is written without a vav. It's like chitzo, like chitzo, chitzo hubrei lemeches yasprei. He said it's, Rebbe Azariah says the word chitzo means it's bizarre, it's outre, it's just like, what is this? A father is being made to slaughter his son? So that's hen erelim tzoaku chutzo, doesn't mean that the angels were crying outside, but that the angels were crying chitzo. Rabbeinu Shlomo, Master of the Universe, it's not nice to, what are you doing here? You're manipulating a man to make him, you're commanding him to slaughter, to shecht his own son? Like, this is bizarre. So then the word chitzo means an expression of zarus and shen. It means something unusual and something foreign or alien. V'lav davke loshen mechza mechza, it doesn't necessarily mean half and half. So the word chitzo, eso edim, here in our Mishnah, may not mean that the witnesses are divided into two. U'mashmo es ha-Mishnah, so then the meaning of our Mishnah, k'sho'y mechitzo se'edim lav l'dayik, she'chitzo yisim ha-Kadosh Baruch Hu l'shnayim, it's not coming to tell us that God split the witnesses into two. Alpha b'shiyesh b'chin ezu gamkein, even though the word chitzo can mean to divide that way. V'lav do ki yesh b'chin ez oylam hazeh, v'yesh b'chin ez oylam habo, because you can divide oylam into oylam hazeh and oylam habo. There are two worlds. There's this world and the other world. But they're not equal, right? You can't compare the smallness of this world with the infinity of the world to come, right? So you can't compare them, lo be'ercham, not in their value, v'lo be'muhusam, not in their essence, v'lo b'shum ponim. You can't compare this world to the other world. U'bishona, in time, yesh b'chinas b'riyas o'olam b'nissan u'b'riyas b'olam b'tishrei. You get the idea that the world is created in Nisan, the world is created in Tishrei, and both of them are the words of the living God. You get the idea, Mereshis Hashona ad Acharis Hashona, from the beginning of the year until the end of the year. But if you think about it, Im Hashona Noat Sofa B'Tchilosa, if the end of the year is stuck into the beginning of the year, right? So what does it mean, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year? They're connected. They're right next to one another. Right? I mean, January is right next to December. Shem Hashona Noat Sofa B'Tchilosa K'moy Galgal, if time is like a wheel, Im Kein Hainu Tchilas Hashona Hainu Achris Hashona, it's the same thing. The beginning of the year is the end of the year. Elashiyesh B'chinas Machtzis Hashona. So what he's saying, that there's, you know, the three witnesses are Olam Shona Nefesh, so if God split Shana to half a year, what Mamash Machitzalosh and Zor? So then what does it mean if we say half doesn't necessarily mean half, sometimes it means strange. Then what do we mean the strangeness of the year? Shiesh b'chinas zoros v'hishtanas b'yichusenu elav yizborach. You could say that there's a strangeness in our year, in the way we relate to God in the year. Ki b'nissan nigalnu, in Nisan we were redeemed. V'hine anachnu k'moy bonim k'talim, in Nisan, Pesach time, God brings us out of Egypt, and we are like, he's like a parent to us. Zekukim l'chinuch matan Torah, we need chinuch, we need guidance, we need matan Torah. U'b'meshach hashona g'doylim mizgabrim, as the year progresses, we grow and change. Atshemagim l'perik, until we reach puberty, u'misyachsim lo yizborach b'chinas ani l'doydi v'doydi li, and then we start to relate to God as I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. It's a different relationship from that of a parent to a child. And then God marries us with the chuppah and the kiddushin throughout the month of Tishrei. And then we go back to being again like children in Nisan again. So throughout the year there is strangeness. There is the change of relationship, and there's even relationship that is a strained relationship, like we find through the summer months when, you know, we're like adolescents, you know, and struggling with God. And then in Nefesh, Yesh b'chinas zochar b'chinas nekeva, we have male and we have female. She'enam shavoy zuluzu, they're not equal. As we were learning in the third chapter, when God says, bring an atonement for me that I diminished the feminine, right? And even in a single soul, you know, we have both the feminine side and the masculine side, and they're not equal. You know, we have the two halves, the two hemispheres of the brain. We have the right hand and the left side, and, you know, they're not equal. You know, that the left side tends to overwhelm the right side with its words and so on. So the word chitzoy sa'edim, when we talk about halving the witnesses, we both mean to divide into two, but also we mean to inject some strangeness. Eidim, and this is note number 10, afu pishizbanu ech ha'ova v'hoiva v'osim is'achtim v'sefer v'sfar v'sipur, even though we explained at the end of last chapter how past and the present and the future come together in the three books that we read about in the very first Mishnah in Sefer Yetzirah, where it says that God created with three books. We said that they are the chronicle, the story, the number, and the narrative. Still, we haven't really been told how these, how time and space and the soul have been woven together. It hasn't been laid out how they develop, how time and space develop. So our Mishnah tells us he halved the witnesses, which is Olam Nefesh and Shana, in the rule of 10, 3, 7, and 12 constellations. So the chok is the rule. If we look above in the first chapter, the first Mishnah, there we talked about chakak. And we said that God carved the universe. And we used the word chok. And then we said that the word chok, the first time we find it is there when Yaakov says to Yehuda, Leyosu shevet mi Yehuda umachoykek mi ben raglav, that the scepter won't depart from Yehuda and the scribing lawgiver from between his legs. And we said that the inyan of Hakika is in Malchus, and we brought the Yerushalmi and the Tosis, who mentions that there's two inyanim. There's the shevet mi Yehuda umachoykek, that the king has to be a man, but the mechoykek, the lawgiver, doesn't actually have to be a man, can also be descended from the female, the girl children of the house of Yehuda. That the Mashiach, the king, has to be a ben achaben from Yehuda, but the mechoykek doesn't necessarily have to be, because I said that the inyan of Malchus is also in the feminine, and so the word chakika is in the feminine, which is the sephira of Malchus. And we said that chakika, carving, when you carve something, then you have to be really exact about the charitz itself. It's not like when you're trying to hollow something out, then it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of line you draw on the stone if you're just trying to hack out a hollow. But when you're writing on the stone, then it really matters how you carve the stone. And that's the inyan of chakika. So the word chok means that you're really careful about what you're doing. So when the Mishnah tells us that God halved their witnesses in the chok of Asara, Shlosha, Shiva, and Yud Beis, then it's telling us that the web is very sensitive, that the fabric of space and time is a very sensitive carving. And the carving, I guess it's like saying that the nodes, the resonance, the numbers to which the universe resonates are these 3, 7, 10, and 12. So the 10 are the 10 sephiros, as we learned in the first chapter in the second Mishnah, which were 5 neged 5, chamesh neged chamesh. So on the one hand you have the 5 sephirot of chesed, they're called the 5 chasadim, which is keter, chochmah, chesed, tiferes, and netzach. And then on the opposite side you have the 5 gevurot, which is bina, gevurah, hoyd, yesod, and malchus. And also we find that the 10 commandments are also split into 2 sets of 5, and they're also called luchos ha'ev and luchos ha'edus, luchos ha'bris. And then we have shloisha, 3. So you can't split 3 into 2 without splitting 1 into halves, but you can split each of the 3 into 2. So how are the 3 split into 2? How are Olam, Shona, and Nefesh split into 2? So we said Ruach, that there were 2 kinds of Ruach, which we learned in Mishnah 8 and Mishnah 9 of the first chapter. There was the first Ruach, which we called Ruach HaKodesh, and then there's the second Ruach, which was Ruach Meiruach. And we said that was the mystery of the kisses, that what was originally inside God then ends up being outside God. There was the Ruach HaKodesh, which then becomes the Ruach Meiruach. And so God splits the 3. The first of the 3 is the Ruach, and also that was represented by the Aleph, and we said that the Aleph, really, if you have a look in note number 13, you'll see how the Aleph can be split into 2 sets of Yud Vav. If you look at the diagonal of the Aleph is 2 Vavs back to back. In actual fact, this actually makes up the number 32. We said Mayim, the second is Mayim, the Mem. Also we have Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim, the waters above the heaven, the waters below the heaven. And also in the mem itself, we have the open mem and the closed mem. In fire, we have the two kinds of fire. We have black fire and white fire, as we learn in Yerushalmi. The Gemara says, Rav Popa b'shem Rav Shimon ben Lokish, the Torah which God gave Moshe on Sinai was written with white fire carved onto black fire. And this is the, if you have a look at the pair of tefillin, you'll find that there are two kinds of shin. On the one side there's a shin with three, on the other side there's a shin with four heads, which is really a mirror image of the other. One is a mirror image of the other. So Aleph, Mem, and Shin, these are the three that we first encountered, the first triplicate, Aleph, Mem, Shin, Ruach, Mayim, Esh. Each of them, it's not that it's split into one and a half and one and a half, but rather the three are each split into two. And then we had the seven, which the Mishnah was clear on how they're split, because they were seven doubles. Sheva kfulois nechlokin kipshutan kosher v'rofe. Each of the seven letters is like b, v, k, ch, p, f, and so on. So they are split. And then there's the 12 mazolois of pekidin, the 12 constellations and functionaries, and they are divided in those that are above and those that are below. Reb Simon said, "Ein lecha kol esav ve'esav she'ein le mazol berikia shemaka esav oimiloi gadal." You don't find, there isn't a single blade of grass that doesn't have a mazel that corresponds to it, that is like an angel. So the idea of the mazel, the idea that everything that exists in the world has a corresponding angel. And then the Mishnah says, so you have the witnesses in the rule of 10, 3, 7, and 12 constellations in Teli, Galgal, and Lev. Teli, Galgal, and Lev are the source of Olam, Shona, and Nefesh, as we will be explaining in Mishnah 4. So let's look here at Mishnah Gimel. Again, Psicha LeMishnah Gimel, this is page 11. Choyza al Perik Rishon, so again the text goes back to something we learned in the first chapter. Masbi'ech shafilo esh v'amayim v'aruach, even fire and water and air, which are the three basic elements that separated right at the very beginning, they're still connected to one another, which is disagrees with the philosophers and the natural, you know, the physicists and that existed in those days, the Aristotelian or Neoplatonic, that they used to say that the yisodot, the elements, whether they're talking about three elements or four, more likely, because mostly by the time that Sefer Yetzirah is written, almost all the philosophers agree that there are four elements of earth, fire, air, and water. And Nefrodoi senzu mizu legamre behechlet, that they are completely detached and separate, and you know, they can't be made to mingle with one another. They can be combined in a sort of a chemical, electromagnetic way, but they will always remain separate. You can combine them, but you can't connect them. You can't make fire and water join and become one element, as it was before they became split this way. So our Mishnah comes to tell us that that's not so. And the Mishnah says, this is Mishnah Gimel, Shloishu, Esh, Umayim, V'ruach, three, fire and water and air, Esh lemalo, fire is above, Umayim lemato, and water is below, V'ruach bintayim, and air in between, V'siman ledovar, and you have an indicator, Shuha Esh, Noiso, Es Hamayim, because fire carries water. Shloish, this is note number 17, Esh, Umayim, V'ruach. You know, when we were learning them in chapter 1, first you had Ruach, then you had Ruach Meruach, then you had Mayim Meruach, and then you had Esh Mimayim. Here, the Mishnah has gone straight back to the wrong way round, right? Three, fire, water, air. It's there in that order for a reason, to tell us that we're really re-examining and sort of climbing back up the back up the ladder where we came from. Haseder Hofer Bidiuk. This, the order that they laid out here is exactly the wrong way around. Lahadgish, in order to emphasize the inyan, Shabala Sefer Choyzer Min Ha'achron El Rishon, that we're going back to look from the end at the beginning. And in the beginning, when we were learning about these three elements of air, water, and fire, and in Mishnah 9 of the first chapter, we talked about how if a person blows into a balloon, his breath separates into three elements. So the heat rises above, and that's what becomes fire. Idem v'tipei maim, the vapor and water droplets, mitzkapsim v'shokin l'matu b'chinas maim, and that becomes the water that gathers at the bottom of the balloon. V'haruach, and the air itself, mispashit u'memalo mamtzi chalal marchi v'hoylech, and the air as it expands creates the volume of the balloon. And if we think of God breathing out from himself, that breath then becomes the universe, space, and the space, you'll have heat, then rising, you'll have water falling, and you'll have air making the volume of space. And this is what God did. As it were, he did by breathing produce this breath from his mouth, and produce these three, ruach, mayim, ve'esh, kemavu barichas, as we explained at length. So, note number 18, esh lemalo, umayim lematu, v'ruach bintayim, fire above, water below, air in between. Vahoyo hava amina lemo shenifredu behechlet. And I might have had good reason to assume that the Greek philosophers were right and that these three elements can never be put back together and they will always remain separate. V'siman ledova, and a sign, shaharihu kishomarti, that it is as I say that they never really were separated, because the fact that in this world they appear to be separated is just because of the way the world is. Nothing actually really changed about the breath of God. That the Ruach Elikim remained what it is, Ruach Elikim. And even though we talk about it having been breathed out, and that's an absurdity, because there is no out of God. There may be an illusion of out of God. And in order for us to sustain our understanding of our own existence, we have to understand that the world exists, and so we go along with the illusion that there is such a thing as the outside of God, and that God breathed out, and, you know, we are in a chumrius, we are in this physical world, but the truth is we're not, and it's an illusion, and all that there is God. And if all that there is God, then this breath that we're talking about, that God breathed out, it never really happened. Doesn't say anywhere that God breathed out. It's just this is the metaphor that we've been using. And the Mishnah here comes to tell us don't get caught up in this metaphor, and that we're still inside the divine. V'siman ledova, and a sign of this is an indicator that they were never separated, is this. Shehoesh noises is amayim. Fire carries water. What does it mean? Sheim techamim is amayim al yedei hoesh. If you heat water, ach tigdal anifuach, oy tigdal anifuach. The water is going to keep on expanding, right? So you'll get steam that keeps on getting bigger. Ach im yachnisu maspik choim techamayim. If you put enough heat, enough energy into the water, yispoitzitzu, the water will explode. The yira la'ayin she'en shem chilik be'etzem bein choyme shomayim le'etzem choyme choyme esh. You could, if you put enough energy into water, it will explode and it will be back into oxygen and hydrogen. Right? I mean, that's all water is, right? If you put enough energy into the molecules of water, you know, you can bring it back to space itself. you can blow it up until all you have is energy. I mean, what is water? It's E equals MC squared, right? So if you put enough energy into it and force the issue, you'll just have pure energy. What is the meaning of E equals MC squared? That which we call matter of the material thing, matter is just really a measure of how much energy you have. What we think of as an atom is really just a little packet of energy. And when you have energy, all it's telling you is that this is how much matter you have. Energy and matter are just interchangeable. They're the same thing. Space-time. You know, now, scientists are telling us that space and time are really dimensions of each other. Because everything in the world is connected in this network, in this field. And between everything in the universe, there is not just space, but also time. And this is something that we find in the Gemara and in the Medrash. It says, the distance of the heaven is measured by 500 years. The Chachamim didn't measure space in parsangs or some other measurement of distance, but they knew that you could only measure space in time, which is, in a sense, you know, how we are measuring distance today. We talk about light seconds, parsecs, light years. It's so many light years away. The time it takes for the light to come to us from the sun is nothing like the time it takes for the light to come to us from the moon. But the speed of light is the same. So moonlight and sunlight both travel at the same speed, which is a universal speed, which is equal no matter where you go in the universe. You find the speed of light is the same. And it doesn't matter what you look at it, how you measure it. So I'll measure it and you'll measure it. We'll get the same measurement, and it doesn't matter where we are. You'll measure it here, I'll stand on the moon, and we'll both measure light, and we'll get the same thing. So it is space and the distance between things that grows or shrinks. And you know, we can actually measure the size of the unit of the universe by heat. Wherever you point a telescope at the universe, doesn't matter if you point a telescope into the most empty quarter of the universe, the background temperature will be 3 Kelvin, because space itself, in order for space to exist, there has to be matter in it, so it can't be absolute zero. How do we measure that? We measure it as 3 Kelvin, which is heat. We can actually measure space as heat, or heat as space. That, you know, so it doesn't matter whether you measure the space by time, by light years, and so on, or whether you measure it by miles, or you can even measure it by degrees centigrade. Because heat and matter and space and time, it's all one. And it's heat that carries everything, because heat is everything. And in fact, scientists talk about if the universe will just, you know, keep on to the end and then just, you know, disappear or wind itself down, all we'll have at the end is some heat. והחיים שמועדדים בכל שטח חלל העולם, היא קולן הנפוח של ברשיס בעולם שהזכרנו בפרק ראשון. And scientists, when they talk about this background radiation of the universe at 3 Kelvin, they say this is the sound of creation. This is the sound of the Big Bang. So, fire carries water. Water is everything material. Fire carries it because fire and water are actually the same thing, because heat is energy and water molecules are just another form of energy. Let's have a look at Mishnah 4. So here we come to understand what's the meaning of teli that has been mentioned. Psicha le Mishnah Dalet. Hine ksiv, it's written, Yitzchak says to Esav, Va'ato, and now, Sono kelicho, Sono kelecho, telicho v'kashtecho, v'tzei ha'sode v'tzudo litzayit. Isaac says, now carry your implements, your quiver and bow, and go out to the field and trap me some game. So there's the first time, in fact, almost the only time, we find in the Torah the word teli. Esav has something called telicho, your teli. And Unkelus translates telicho seifach, which means your sword. Rashi says, charbecho shedarkecho litloiso. Why would Unkelus translate teli as a sword? Because the word teli means to hang. So what is it that hangs? It's the sword that hangs in a scabbard. The Yoinesen Targum, the Targum which we know as the Targum, the Jerusalem of the Palestinian Targum, which is attributed to Yoinesen, he translated as Beis Girach, the house of your arrows, which is the quiver. Upirish Ashba Sachitzim, that's the quiver in which you put arrows. So when Yitzchak is telling Esav, he's telling him, so no kelecho, take your implements, telecho, your quiver, v'kashtecho, and your bow, v'tzei hasode, and go out to the field v'tzudo litzayit. But according to Unkelus and Rashi, telecho is your sword. V'chein pirshu roiv ha-mefarshim, and most of the mefarshim, the commentators, translate telecho as quiver. But if we look at the pasuk, it's difficult to understand. It says, "Va'atu sono kelecho," and Rashi says, "Sono, please carry." So Rashi actually says that the word "sono" is like an expression of sharpening, not to pick up. Koyse sheshaninu ein mashchizin es hasakin avo misio agabechav chaveto. The halach is that if you're allowed to shecht an animal on yontif, but you're not allowed to sharpen the knife with a stone, but you're allowed to sort of rub one blade against another. And that's, Rashi says, if you look at the Mishnah, it says, mesio. He rubs one against the other. So then if we go back to the pasuk, then, sono kelecho, Yitzchak is telling Esav to sharpen his knife. Chadeit sakincho u'shchoit yofa. Yitzchak is telling Esav, don't tear out the throats of these animals you're going to be feeding me, but sharpen your knife and cut properly. Do shchita like it should. Shalei tachilenu nevela, so you shouldn't feed me, you know, animals that haven't been properly slaughtered. Uledivrei ho'oyme telecho haino ha'ashpad, but according to the one who says that the teli is actually a quiver, how are you going to explain this Rashi, and how are you going to explain this expression that Yitzchak says, please lift up, sono? According to Rashi, who says teli is the sword, sono means sharpen it nicely, but according to the one who says teli is the quiver in which you put the arrows, what's the meaning of sono? So there's a note here, note number 21, Here's a note from the Sefer Toldos Odom, who is one of the students of the Rebbeinu of Pshischa, and he brings an interesting Torah. He brings a pasuk. Yitzchak says, "V'atosun o kelecho." Now lift up your kelim, your telecho, kashtecho, etc. Pirish Rashi, and he brings the Rashi. Rashi says, "Sharpen your knife." And so he says like this. I have something to say. He says, "Mazi telecho v'kashtecho." What does it mean, your teli and your bow? Hala ein shoychtim bekeshes. If we say that a teli is a quiver and a kashtecho is a keshes, is a bow, why is Yitzchak telling him to sharpen his arrows? You don't do shechita with a bow and arrow. So it should, if the telicha means a sword, like Rashi says, then why does Yitzchak tell him to take the keshes, the bow? He doesn't. If he's taking a sword and cutting and shechting an animal with a sword, why bother with a bow altogether? So the Toldos Odom says we could explain it like this. Dagon HaKodesh HaYehudi Mepeshischa, the holy Yid used to say, this was like a pearl in his mouth. He used to say this often. Whatever is connected to the pure is pure. It's a mission in Taharas. It occurs in this concept that if it's connected to something Tahor, if something is connected to something that is not Tamei, and the thing is tahor, then the thing which is connected is also tahor. Right? Like, if I have a cup, and the cup has a handle, if the cup is tahor, then the handle can't be tamei. Whatever is connected to the tahor is tahor. So the holy Yid used to say, chevre, he used to tell his chevre, whatever is connected to the tahor is tahor. So all you have to do to be holy is to connect to somebody who's holy. V'hikshiloi Rebbe Rebbeinim, and the Rebbe Rebbeinim, who was the great student of the holy Yid, Rebbe Rebbeinim of Pshischa, he asked his Rebbe, he said, that's not fair. Loksum midas hadin, ha'itochen zois shizdame letzalik ha'sheovad ha'boyer b'richi kol yomam. How can you compare somebody who spent his whole life in worship of God, b'mesiris nefesh b'chol enyonim, and gave away his soul, and didn't eat, and didn't sleep, and didn't enjoy, you know, all the pleasures of life because he was so busy worshipping God, and now comes some guy from the fremd, from outside, and he connects himself to the tzaddik, and now you tell me that he's as holy as the tzaddik. That doesn't seem fair. This is what the Rebbe Rebbeinim asked his Rebbe, the holy Yid. Just because he connects to the tahor, he now becomes tahor like him? So you know what the holy Yid answered him? He said, "Ain't the over klal chasvele? There's nothing wrong in that. Kilios mechubel tohor hu yoisa avoidem elios tohor ba'atzmai. It's harder to be connected to somebody holy than it is to do all the work yourself. If you can really connect to somebody holy, then you deserve to be holy because it's a bigger job than actually acquiring it for yourself. So those people who think that they've connected with a rebbe." And, you know, they're all fine now because, you know, they're connected to something holy. They should know that however much work the Rebbe put into becoming as holy as he did, that's less work than it takes to really connect with him. So it's not unfair, right? The Kavanosoi, who, Alpi HaNoida, and the Toldos Odom goes on to say, what did the holy Yid mean when he said that? That it's harder to connect with somebody holy than it is to actually do the work yourself. He says, well known, ki amido yisroes kishim hapachoysim letoiva lidei tshuva masim toivim heim kelim la'avoydus ha'boyri yisbarchshme. When a person takes the flaws, the character defects that he has, and by worshipping God, and he turns his life around, and does tshuva, and, you know, alidei zeh yuchel lovo la'avoydus ha'shem yisbor b'shleimus. If a person really does teshuva, then all the character flaws, he brings them with him, and they also become part of the tools of worship, right? When he does so, he's on a very high level, right? al derech she'amru b'mukim she'bal tshuva oimdim tzadikim gemurim einim yecholim lamid. The Gemara says where a bal tshuva, the level that a bal tshuva stands, that even a pure tzadik can't stand there, because the person who was doing bad and then he turned his life around, he's bringing all those skills that he learned doing bad, he brings them also, and they also become part of the good now, right? Melik she'oisekeinu b'mal yisrael v'yidua ki Esav hoy eloi kelim la'avodas Hashem yisbarach. Esav had tremendous gifts. He had the kelim with which to worship God. He really did. V'hashloisha averes she'hoy eloi, and the three sins that he had, that he was a pagan, that he worshipped the lowest idols, and Gilai Royas, he was a rapist, and all kinds of incest and adultery that he used to get into, Vishvichas Domim, and he was a murderer, he was just a brigand. His job, Esav's job, was to turn his life around, and then all those character defects would have become like jewels in his crown, right? This is what Yitzchak meant when he said, "Sono telicho ze'avoydezora." When he says, "Lift up your quiver," that's referring to, or "Lift up your sword," that refers to avoydezora, because loshen teluyo, ma'amin ve'emel ma'amin. What does it mean that Esav was an? I mean, he grew up in Yitzchak's house. How could he have been a pagan if he grew up in Yitzchak's house? But you know something? He believed, but he didn't believe. So that's the idea of toli, hanging, you know? Something is suspended, right? That's the Loshon Telicho. Kashtecho yebo, hu shfichas domim. That refers to murder. V'tzei hasode, and go out to the field. Zegil arroyes, this refers to rape. As we learn, when it talks about in the last week's Sedra about a man who rapes a woman, it says, and he found her in the field. So this is really what Yitzchak was telling Esav, sono kelecha, lift up. He's telling him to raise those character defects that he has. Right? In fact, I'm thinking that maybe the best idea would be that we'll stop here and revisit this next week.